Listening Library presents Feed by M.T. Anderson. Read for you by David Aaron Baker. To all those who resist the feed, M.T. Anderson. O dear white children, casual as birds, playing among the ruined languages, so small beside their large, confusing words, so gay against the greater silences of dreadful things you did. From Anthem for St. Cecilia's Day, W. H. Auden. Part 1. Moon. Your face is not an organ. We went to the moon to have fun, but the moon turned out to completely suck. We went on Friday because there was shit all to do at home. It was the beginning of spring break. Everything at home was boring. Link Arwaker was like, "I'm so null," and Marty was all, "I'm null too, unit." But, I mean, we were all pretty null because for the last, like, hour we'd been playing with three uninsulated wires that were coming out of the wall. We were trying to ride shocks off them. So Marty told us there was this fun place for low grav on the moon. Low grav can be kind of stupid, but this was supposed to be good. It was called the Ricochet Lounge. We thought we'd go there for a few days with some of the girls and stay at a hotel there and go dancing. We flew up and our feeds were burbling all sorts of things about where to stay and what to eat. It sounded pretty fun, and at first there were lots of pictures of dancing and people with romper gills and metal wings, and I was like, this'll be big, really big. But then I guess I wasn't so skip when we were flying over the surface of the moon itself, because the moon was just like it always is after your first few times there, when you get over being like, whoa, unit, the moon, the goddamn moon. And instead, there's just the rockiness and the suckiness and the craters all being full of old broken shit, like domes nobody's using anymore, and wrappers and claws. The thing I hate about space is that you can feel how old and empty it is. I don't know if the others felt like I felt about space, but I think they did because they all got louder. They all pointed more and squeezed close to Link's window. You need the noise of your friends in space. I feel real sorry for people who have to travel by themselves. In space, that must suck. When you're going places with other people, with this big group, everyone is leaning toward each other, and people are laughing, and they're chatting, and things are great. And it's just like in a commercial for jeans, or something with nougat. To make some noise, Link started to move his seat up and back to whack Marty's knees. I was trying to sleep for the last few minutes of the flight because there was nothing to see except broken things in space. And when we're going hard, I get real sleepy real easy, and I didn't want to be null for the unets on the moon at the hotel if any of them were youch. I guess if I'm honest, then I was hoping to meet someone on the moon. Maybe part of it was the loneliness of the craters, but I was feeling like it was maybe time to hook up with someone again, because it had been a couple of months. At parties, I was starting to get real lonely, even when there were other people around me, and it's worse when you leave. Then there's that silence when you're driving home alone in the up car, and there's nothing but the feed telling you, this is the music you heard, this is the music you missed, this is what's new. Listen. And it'd be good to have someone to download with. It'd be good to have someone in the up car with you, flying home with the lights underneath you and the green faces of mothers that you can see halfway through the windows of dropping vans. As we flew across the surface of the moon, I couldn't sleep. Link was playing with his seat like an asshole. He was moving it forward and backward. Marty had dropped his bird, these fake birds that were the big spit and lots of people had them, and Marty's bird was floating off because there was hardly any gravity, and whenever he leaned out to get his bird, Link would slam his seat back like Meg Hard and it would go bam on Marty's face, and they would start laughing. Marty'd be all like, "Unit, just wait one," and Link would be, "Go for it, try it," and Marty'd be like, "Unit, you are so," and then they would be all big laughing, and I felt like a complete bone sprocket for trying to sleep when there was fun. I kept hoping the waitress lady would say something to make him shut up for a minute, but as soon as we got out of Earth's gravitational zone, she had gone all gaga over the duty-free. I didn't want to be sleepy and all, like, stupid, but I'd been drinking pretty hard the night before and had been in Mal and was feeling kind of like shit. So it was not a good way to start this whole trip to the moon with a seat thumping on Marty's face and him going, "Unit, I'm trying to get my bird." Link was saying, "Go for it." And Marty went, "Link Whacker, shit, you're doing all this meg damage to my knees and my face." "Kiss the chair, pucker up." They both started laughing again. "Okay," said Marty. "Okay, just tell me which of my frickin' organs you're gonna smash this time."
"Keep your tray in the upright position."
"Like what organ? Just tell me."
"Those aren't organs."
"What do you mean?"
"Your face is not an organ."
"My face is too an organ. It's alive." "Oh my God, is there enough oxygen?" said our friend Callista. "Because are you having some kind of neuron death?"
"I'm trying to sleep," Logo complained. She yawned. "I'm flatlining Meg."
Then there was this wham, and Marty was all, "Oh, shit," holding onto his face. And I sat up and was like, completely, there is no hope of sleeping with these morons doing rumpus on my armrest. A waitress came by, and Link stopped and smiled at her, and she was like, "What a nice young man." That was because he purchased like a slop bucket of cologne from the duty-free. Impact. So I was tired and pissy from the get-go. When we got off the ship, our feeds were going fugue with all the banners. The hotels were jumping on each other, and there was bump from, like, the casinos and mudslides and the gift shops and places where you could rent extra arms. I was trying to talk to Link, but I couldn't because I was getting bannered so hard, and I kept blinking and trying to walk forward with my carry-on. I can't hardly remember any of it. I just remember that everything in the banners looked goldy and sparkly, but as we walked down to the luggage, all the air vents were streaked with black. The whole time was like that. The moon went on and on. It was me and Marty and Link, and Callista and Loga and Quendi. The three girls had one room at the hotel. The three of us boys had another room. There were lots of people there for the break, and kids were all leaping up and down the halls and making their voices echo. It was a pretty crummy hotel, and there weren't enough sheets, and there was hardly any gravity, and no one had a fake ID, so they put a lock on the minibar. I was like, "This is a crummy hotel," but Marty was all, "Unit, this is where I stayed last time. It's like meg cheap, and all the staff are made from a crystalline substance." Our feeds were clear again from all the moon banners, so for a long time we all watched the football game, while the girls, they did something else on the feed. They were chatting each other, and we couldn't hear them. But they kept laughing and touching each other's faces. I wanted to go to sleep, but every time I tried, bam, Link and Marty would suddenly go all fission on me, saying, "Titus, did you fucking see that? Did you see Hemecker?" I tried to tell myself that being here was not re-sleeping, but re-being with your friends and doing great stuff. I tried to concentrate on all the stimulus and the fun, all of it. There was not always too good fun, though. We ordered some fancy nutrient IVs from room service, but they gave us all headaches, and we went out to this place that Marty said served the best electrolyte chunkies, but it had closed a year before. It was dinner time, so we had dinner at a J.P. Barnegan's Family Extravaganza, which was pretty good, and just like the one at home. We got some potato skins for appetizers. It was at least good to get out of the hotel because most of the rest of the city had pretty good artificial gravity, so if you drop things, at least they fucking fell. Was almost like normal, which is how I like it. Then we went back to the hotel. There were parties there, but it was mostly college kids. Usually we can get in because me and Link and Marty and Callista, we can turn on the charm. Callista's blonde and she can do this sorority girl ice princess thing, which she does with her voice and her shoulder blades, which makes people think she's older than she is and really important. Link is tall and but ugly and really rich. That kind of old rich that's like radiation, so that it's always going dee 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 in invisible waves, and people are suddenly like, "Unit, hey, Unit," and they want to be guys with him. Marty, his thing is that he's good at like anything, any game, and I just stand there silent and act cool, and we're this trio, the three of us guys being like total guys, which usually makes people let us in and give us beer. That didn't work this time. We tried to get in, and we were standing in the doorway, and they were all, "Who the hell are you?" We looked at ourselves. We all looked kind of bad. We looked tired and sleepy, and even though we're all pretty good looking, except Link, we were all pale and our hair was greasy.
We had the lesions that people were getting, and ours right then were kind of red and wet-looking. Link had a lesion on his jaw, and I had lesions on my arm and on my side. Quendi had a lesion on her forehead. In the lights of the hallway, you could see them real good. There are different kinds of lesions. I mean, there are lesions and lesions, but somehow our lesions, in this case, seemed like kid stuff. Later, after some showers, we went to the Ricochet Lounge. It was very low-grav, no-grav, and it was all about whamming one person into another in big stuffed suits. The place had been hip, like, a year and a half ago. The slogan was, "Slam the ones you love." Now the place just looked old and sad. The walls were all marked up from people hitting them. Even with his impact helmet on, Link stood out. He's much taller than anyone else, because he's part of this secret patriotic experiment. In the low gravity, his arms seemed like they were everywhere. He swung them around and spun. I was being a little careful when I ran into other people because of the arm lesion. It had broken open and it was oozing. Still, it was pretty fun at first, launching ourselves off the walls and going like, and then hitting other people and wrestling while floating to the floor. I was watching Loga real close. She and I had gone out about 6 months before until we had this big argument. And then it was this big thing. And she was like, "I never want to see you again." And I was like, "Fine, okay, fine, then get some special goggles." But now we were friends, which was good. I think it's always really limp when guys can't talk to the girls they went out with. Plus, I was thinking that maybe Logan and I could hook up again if we didn't find anyone else, like on the moon or whatever. I didn't have a thing for Callista or Quendi, or even completely a thing anymore for Loga, but I was watching Link slamming into them, and when he slammed, it said that he and the girls all knew what each other's bodies would be like, and that was part of the game. I was unhappy because Loga and I had been a dyad, and now when I ran into her at high speeds, it wasn't anything like when Link ran into her at high speeds. I thought she and I should have a little secret way of collision, but usually we sailed right past each other. Marty, who can do anything good, he was off in the corner doing these gymnastics in midair. He had a ball, and he was somehow kicking it in circles so it came back to his foot. Link said, "Over here," and Marty popped the ball to him, and he kicked it to me. For a while, we played a game with the ball, and we were twirling all over the place, and we were like, what's it called when you skim really close over the surface of something? We were that to the floor, with our arms out. But, of course, Marty started winning all the time, and Link, who doesn't like to lose, was like, "This is null. This sucks." "Pass," said Marty. "What's fucking doing?" "This place sucks," said Link. Marty said, "Give it a chance, unit." But Link was like, "No, play by yourself. Play with yourself." And suddenly everything seemed really stupid. And then I saw someone watching. I wasn't glad. I looked again. She was the most beautiful girl, like, ever. She was watching our stupidity. There was a valve that led into the food bar. She was in the valve. She had a crash helmet under her arm. She had this short blonde hair. Her face, it was like, I don't know, it was beautiful. It just, it wasn't the way, I guess it just wasn't the way it looked like, but also how she was standing with her arm. I just stared at her. I was getting some Meg feed on the food bar, and the pot stickers were really cheap. I stood there wondering what it was that made her so beautiful. She was looking at us like we were shit. Her spine. Maybe it was her spine. Maybe it wasn't her face. Her spine was, I didn't know the word. Her spine was like, the feed suggested, supple.
You'll be more than a little attracted to its powerful T44 Fermion lift with vertical rise of 50 feet per second. And if you like comfort, quality, and class, the supple upholstery and ergonomically designed dash will leave you something like hysterical. But the best thing about it is the financing at 18.9% APR.
Only on Sportsbox. Take a man, take a gas sled, take a chlorine storm on Jupiter, and boys, it's time to spit into the wind with Alex Neatham. The hardest, hippest, hypest.
Month summer styles. And the word on the street is squeaky.
Their hit single, "Bad Me, Bad You."
I like you so bad and you like me so bad. We are so bad. It would be bad if we did not get together, baby.
Costas M's American Family Restaurants, where time seems to stop while you chew.
Juice. I followed her when I could. She was sitting in the snack bar now with her back to the valve. She was all clipped into the seat so she wouldn't float away if she jerked. I bought a snack. It was chocolate mousse in a tube. I hung onto the counter with one hand. I watched her through my underarm. She was sitting there with her slam suit off now and in a bundle. Her helmet was on a hook next to her. I took a slug of the tube mousse. I looked back over at her. She was wearing a dress of gray wool. It wasn't plastic, and the light didn't reflect off it. Wool. Gray wool. Black stockings. Her shoulders were like all bent in, as if she didn't want anyone to be looking at her. She was just sitting, clipped in. The others came through the valve behind me. I kept my head low. I didn't want them to be like, "Hey, unit, hey, Titus, what's doing?" And then she'd look at me. She would be disturbed. Luckily, they came in, and immediately Link and Marty started doing these gymnastics, and they got in trouble, so I could stay watching her without them being a mob on me. This guy, he was from the club, and he was yelling at them because they kept bouncing on the snack bar, which was off bounds for still bouncing. Behind the girl in the gray was a big window, and you could see we were in a bubble way high up over the moon. Down on the ground, tourists were riding big proteins across the craters. All the stars were out. The guy was still yelling at the others over by the valve. He was all, "Da-da-da, be removed from the premises, da-da-da, express instructions, da-da." I lowered my head, and I turned it to the girl in gray. When she thought no one was looking, she opened her mouth. Something trembled there. Juice. She had filled her mouth with juice. "Da-da-da, liability, da-da-da, think you're doing." I shifted. I watched the juice. For her own amusement, she was letting it go, gentle and sexy. She just opened her mouth and pushed it out with her tongue. The juice came out of her lips as if it was being extracted real careful by a rock star dentist who she loved. Her eyes were barely open, and it came out in low grav, no grav, as a beautiful purple wobble. It hung in front of her, her juice. It stayed inches from her face. Her tongue was close behind it, perched in the air like a pink slug gargoyle. With her eyes almost shut, she watched traces on the drink's round surface swirl. The nose grid. Link whispered at my side, "This so big sucks."
"This place doesn't suck," said Marty. "It's good."
"Maybe," said Callista. "If there were certain people who didn't go jumping on people's heads near the snack bar, if there weren't those people, then maybe we wouldn't all be standing here having a big shame banquet." Marty was getting angry that everyone was like turding on his recommendation, and I just wanted them all to shut up somehow. I mean, nicely, because suddenly I realized that we didn't really sound too smart. If someone overheard us, like that girl, they might think we were dumb. I was playing with the magnets on my boots and trying not to look at her. I didn't want her to feel my eyes before I made my move. I was careful. Quendi and Logan went off to the bathroom because hairstyles had changed. Marty drifted around and made slit eyes at Link. Link and I were chatting about the girl, like I was going, "She is Meg Youch," and he was going, "What the hell's she wearing?" And I was going, "Wool. It's wool, like from an animal." And then Callista did her own chat to us, which was, "If you want to hear about an animal, what about two guys staring with their mouths wide open so they look completely Cro-Magnon?" That shut us up, and we stared out the window. Rappers were turning through space like birds. Quendi came back from the bathroom and said, "Oh my God, like, big thanks to everyone for not telling me that my lesion is like Meg completely spreading." "Hun," said Callista, "it's not spreading. Oh my God, it's going to be like larger than my whole head. I'm going to need a hat just to have all this lesion. It will go onto the brim."
"Exercise the breath," said Link. "Nobody cares about a stupid lesion."
"How can you not?" said Quendi.
"It's huge, and it's right on my forehead. It's like bong."
She trembled her hands around the lesion like it was a kind of lesion gong. Logo went, "No one will notice." If they don't know you, Marty said, they're not going to know what you normally look like.
Oh, so they'll think that usually my forehead is, like, weeping?
Ask her, said Link. He pointed to the girl in gray. He said, Miss, I wonder if you would. Could you look at this girl and tell me if you notice anything?
The girl turned around and looked at Quendi. She said, The lesion isn't bad.
Quendi's hands were out in a please. You saw it. See? Like, how far is the airlock?
Hun, said Callista, listen to the girl.
The girl said, I've been thinking because of my neck.
The girl's lesion was beautiful. It was like a necklace, a red choker.
The face, said the girl, is a grid. The two big imaginary lines are down the center of the face and one just across the top of the cheeks. This is my theory, anyway. The nose is where those lines intersect. The more a lesion interferes with those lines, the more noticeable it is. See, the hardest lesion to carry off is one on the nose itself. In your case, you have this lesion which is entirely on the edge of this one quadrant. That's not going to matter. It's not on a line.
She unclipped herself and reached up with both hands and touched her thumbs together and made football goalposts around Quendi's face.
Framing. See? Your lesion, it's on the edge of your face, so it frames your face. It draws attention to your face. The good grid. See, you have this great grid. I'm probably saying way too much.
We were all kind of stunned.
Yeah, said Callista, sounding confused. She's right. It just frames your face.
The girl in gray touched her own lesion with a napkin. She said, I want mine to go all the way around. I want mine to be a necklace, but right now it's just a torque. We were all just kind of staring at her like she was an alien. She smiled. We kept staring at her.
There are times when you just want to sink through the floor, she said, but then you realize there's no air out there.
Hey, said Marty, I got a lesion on my foot. You want to see it?
She smiled sweetly. No, not really, she said.
Link pointed to his face and was like, Hey, what about my lesion? Look at this puppy. It bleeds sometimes. You like this?
She smirked. Oh, mm-mm, she said. You put the supper back in suppuration.
Link thought that was hilarious. Of course, he didn't have any idea what the hell she was talking about either, but he started laughing while the rest of us were still looking up suppuration on the feed English to English word book. She was now completely youch on all of our meters, except with the girls, who I could tell had started to chat each other like some ants after someone's buried a missionary alive in the middle of their hill. On the one hand, I thought she was the most amazing person I had ever seen in my life, even though she was weird as shit. On the other hand, I was pretty disappointed she was skeezing this sexy talk with Link Arwaker, who women for some reason always go for, in spite of the fact that he's a meg asshole to them. For example, a slurpy question about, oh, what about my lesion? Let's talk more about me and my open sores. Marty was trying to make up lost ground by saying, maybe you could change the bandages on my foot, but that was clearly just disgusting to everyone. We were all like, Unit, no one wants to see your damn foot, and Jesus, Marty, Unit, stow the mess hole. Link was asking her, who are you? Where do you come from? And then she looked at me, just at me, and I knew she was wondering what I thought about the guys and seductiveness and skis and all. She was waiting for me to say something to see if I was going to skis like Marty and Link. I wondered whether she wanted me to skis. She seemed really smart from what she said, and she was pretty, and I was still thinking about that globe of juice floating in front of her face. I was still thinking about the beauty of how that juice had been born delicately from her lips, how it had been born whole, and how her tongue stood there afterwards to see the juice make its trembling progress into the world. But I had nothing to say. She and the girls spent the rest of the hour fixing Quendi's hair to, like, showcase the lesion. Usually Quendi is just like a kind of broken little economy model of Callista, and she knows that and feels real bad about it. But when this girl helped her, it wasn't like that. Quendi was the center of everyone for a long time. That was why I kept looking at the girl in gray and started to want, more than anything else that night, to be with her.
based on the true story of a clone fighting to save her own liver from the cruel and ruthless original who's farming her for organs. Nature versus Nurture, a Primus primetime feedcast event. Image of a girl weeping on a courtroom floor.
I am not girl number two! Please, Judge Spandex, I'm also number one! I'm not a product, but a person!
Image of a girl holding a blaster to a twin's temple.
Remember, bitch, you can't spell danger without DNA!
The cola with the refreshing taste of citrus and butter.
An adventure in slouching.
Calculon, new solutions for...
It's dance. It's dance, dance, dance. That's fun. Fun's fun, and fun's what you can have. There's nothing to stop you from fun. Do you see the bodies? Can you smell the beat? Then you'll come and roar with us. Come and throw your boots at superstars. Come thrash in the cool until your head opens up and you see the veins of people you love bright as branches against the sky. And burnt in your brain will be the fun, all of the fun, and the lights, and the Doppler fade of screaming you heard at the Rumble Spot. The Rumble Spot. The Rumble Spot. An ocean of chaos in the sea of tranquility.
Images of coke falling in rivulets down chiseled mountainsides. Children being held toward the sun. Blades slicing grass. A hand extended toward the lemonade like gods at creation. Boys in Gap tees, shot from a rocket. More lining up with tin helmets. Nike Grav gear plunging into Montana. A choir of Jamaican girls dressed in pinafores and strap-on solar cells. Dry cleaners ironing the cheek prostheses of the rich. Friends clutching at birds made of alloys. Law partners jumping fences. Snow, altitude, tears, hugs, night.
The moon is in the house of boring. She was on the moon all alone. Here it was, spring break, and she was on the moon where there was all this mega action, and she was there without friends. She said she just walked through the crowds and watched, and she saw these great things that way. She said she was there to observe. There were crowds in the domes at night spraying Gatorade from hoses, and all these college guys without shirts lifting their arms. There was a beetle that walked through the lanes and gave out prizes, which seemed really good, but she said that really, the prizes, they were kind of shitty when you looked at them close up, because sometimes parts weren't included. She saw pools filled with foam. Her name was Violet. We asked her to come with us. We wanted to go to sleep by then, but we were on the moon, even if it sucked, and it was spring break, you know, with the action, so there was no way we were admitting we wanted to go to sleep. We told her we were thinking about going to some club called the Rumble Spot that we'd heard about on the feed. I don't know, she said. But I was like, you gotta go. You can go and, you know, observe. Marty said, it will be a... He kind of wiggled his hand. Since you put it that way, she said, kind of fresh. Callista laughed. Suddenly I knew Callista was either going to love her or hate her. After we were walking for a few minutes, it was, on the scale, maybe closer to hate, because Marty and Link and I were all walking around Violet and asking her all these questions, and she was asking us stuff, and we were telling her, and I don't think the other girls really were too skip about walking behind us. Link said he wanted to get cranked before we went, and he said, was there any place we could drink without IDs? Marty said he knew this one place, which was called Sombrero Dot, and he went there before with his cousin. He said it wasn't too out of the way. We got there and it had been torn down. They'd built a pretty nice stucco mall there, so Loga and Quendi said we should go in and buy some cool stuff to go out in. That seemed good to us. I wanted to buy some things, but I didn't know what they were. After we walked around for a while, everything seemed kind of sad and boring, so we couldn't tell any more what we wanted. Our feeds tried to help, and as we were walking around, we were getting all the prices of things, but really the only thing that I wanted to do was get a pair of infrared knee bands, and I could get better ones off the feed and have them sent to my house than the stupid physical moon stores. Quendi bought some shoes, but the minute she walked out of the store, she didn't like them anymore. Marty couldn't think of anything he wanted, so he ordered this really null shirt. He said it was so null, it was like ordering nothing. Now it was even later, and we wanted to go to the club, but we hadn't got drunk yet, so Link said maybe we could take a cab to the hotel and break into the minibar. As we were driving through the tube streets, there was all this commotion because of the protest about the moon. There were all these kids, what my dad calls Eurotrash, and they were standing in the middle of the square and broadcasting to everyone all these slogans, and it was hard not to receive because they were so angry, but the cab drove right by them and they didn't stop us. They were protesting all these things. Some of them were even protesting the feed. They were shouting, "Chip in my head, I'm better off dead. Chip in my head, I'm better off dead." Loga rolled her eyes and was like, "Oh my God." We got back to the hotel. Kids were running down the halls with their fake birds. The fake birds were still in style. It was stupid because the birds didn't even fly or sing or anything. We went to the girls' bedroom and started to assault the minibar. I wanted to break it open quickly because Violet was looking like she wasn't having fun. She was sitting all stiff on the bed. "Just a sec," I said. She nodded, but it was kind of polite. Callista was whispering to Link, "What's her problem?" We tried the minibar first with a comb, then with kicking. We threw it against the wall, which wasn't as hard to do with almost no gravity. "You broke off a thing," said Marty. "You broke off a fucking thing." "A caster," I said. "Caster," said Link, pointing at my nose. "Good one." You know your break sucks when the most brag part of the night is you coming up with the word caster. Violet was just sitting on the bed, playing with her thumb. Her shoulders were droopy and her feet were turned in. In fact, all the girls looked kind of on suspend. Callista and Loga were staring into space, watching something on the feed. "Fuck," said Link, kicking the minibar. "I want to get weasel-faced." "There's no way you're getting weasel-faced," I said. "Let's just go." Marty was like, "We could malfunction." "Oh, God," said Loga and Quendi, rolling their eyes. Violet looked real uncomfortable now. It was pretty obvious she didn't want to be with us. Link looked around at the girls' faces. "What's the problem?" he said. "Drop it, Link," I said. "We're not going in Mal." "I heard about this great site called Loeb Reamer. $85, one click, and we'll be completely raked for an hour and a half. We won't know which way is up. That's big, big scrambled for cheap." "Unit," said Marty. "We're fucking there." Link said, "Okay, let's drop it, units." I said, "No one wants to be fuguing." "Am I no one?" said Link. Cliss was like, "Are you asking in terms of sex appeal?" "Ow," Marty said. Link said, "Shut up, Marty." Callista chatted all of us guys. "Don't, like, push this, especially because the girl is meg uninto it." Link was like, "Loeb Reamer, Loeb Reamer, do those words mean nothing to you?" "Break, Link, break and upgrade." There was no way he was getting lobotomized or weasel-faced, so we just went over to the rumble spot unslammed. It was their youth in action night, so we could get in. It was meg big, big loud. There was everything there. There was about 1 million people, it seemed, and lights, and the beat was rocking the moon. There was a band hung by their arms and their legs from the ceiling, and there was girders and floating units going up and down, and these meg youch latex ripple chicks dancing on the bar, and there were all these frat guys that were wearing these unit, they were fucking brag, they were wearing these tachyon shorts so you couldn't barely look at them, which were $789.99 according to the feed, and they were on sale for like $6.99 at the Zone and could be shipped to the hotel for an additional $78.95, and that was just one great thing that people were wearing. When I looked around, I wanted so much that all of the prices were coming into my brain, and it was bam, 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 like fugue joy, and Logan, Quendi, and Callista were already out on the dance floor, and my feed was going fried, going things about the dance and pictures they were feed-flinging across the dance floor of people on fire doing the moves. Violet was screaming to me. I couldn't hear a thing. She was like, "Da-da-da, da-da." I was like, "What?" She chatted me. "This is a scene." I was like, "Don't you dance?" "Not really. Are these all college kids?" "I bet most of them. Look at the guy in the, you know, that thing. The neck bat? Bow tie." He was maybe 100 or so, dancing with the Ripple Chicks, a man in a dirty old tweed jacket. And he had this long white hair that looked kind of yellow, and his eyes were wide like he was in Mal, but I'm not sure he was in Mal. He kept on sticking his thumbs up in the air. And then they turned off the artificial gravity, and we all went bounding accidentally, and it was like people cruising past each other with their necks kinked, and Violet grabbed onto my arm, and now I was thinking that even though she looked really uncomfortable, and like she was watching some kind of bugs in an experiment, it wasn't so bad being a bug as long as she grabbed onto my arm. So I said, "Don't worry, we'll drift down." "Sorry," she chatted. "No wrong," I said. "Really, I didn't mean to grab you." "No wrong." I put my hand over her hand on my arm, and then she smiled and took her hand out from under my arm, and by that time we'd come down again and were bending our knees. The guy with the tweed jacket had on a jet belt, and he was flying around near the ceiling.
"You don't look like you're having fun," I chatted to her.
"I will."
"When?"
"I'm not used to this."
"What do you do for fun?"
"When?"
"Normally?"
"I haven't been on the moon before."
"I mean anywhere. What do you do?"
The man with the bow tie was standing near us. He was trying to talk to Link by cranking Link's head around and shouting into his ear. Link was backing away.
"Are you having a good time?"
she asked.
"The moon really isn't working out," I said.
"Next time maybe you should try Mars."
"Yeah, I've been to Mars," I said. "It was dumb."
Suddenly she laughed.
"Are you serious?"
"Yeah, I'm serious."
"Oh my God," she said.
"Mars is a whole planet.
And it's dumb."
She was like,
"Dumb?"
She was starting to piss me off. I said,
"Yes, dumb.
The whole world?
Dumb.
The whole world?
Dumb.
Oh, this is golden.
The red planet was a piece of shit.
I don't believe you could..."
But I couldn't receive any more of her chat, because our feeds were spiking and the music was getting louder with the band singing "I'll Sex You In." And I saw her folding her arms like she didn't like me, and I didn't like her, and everyone was pulsing, even the old guy, and everyone was hopping, and they were all scatter-feeding pictures across the floor. Tribal dances, stuff with gourds, salsa, houses under breaking dams, women grinning, women oiling men with their fingertips, women taking out their teeth, girls' stomachs, boys' calves, rockets from old movies flaring, bikini tops, fingers creeping into nostrils, silos, suns, and the old man was standing by our side and trying to yell, but we couldn't hear him, so he leaned closer and he said to us, to Marty and Violet and now Link and me, he said, yelled more like it, he yelled, "We enter a time of calamity." We stared. "We enter a time of calamity." We tried to back up, all of us except Violet, who was confused, and Link was saying, "This unit, he's like completely fuguing. He has this, 'We enter a time of calamity! We enter a time of calamity!'" The old man reached out and, with a metal handle, touched me on the neck. Suddenly, I could feel myself broadcasting. I was broadcasting across the scatter feed, going helplessly, "We enter a time of calamity! We enter a time of calamity!" I couldn't stop. And he had touched Violet now, and Link, and Marty, and from all of them it was coming. "We enter a time of calamity! We enter a time of calamity!" And now I could feel that it was coming from other places, too, other people he had touched. And Marty was trying to say that he'd never had this before, it was kind of cool, but he couldn't because his signal was jammed just with that, over and over again, all of us in a chorus going, "We enter a time of calamity! We enter a time of calamity!" And people were turning toward us. People were looking. We were standing in a line, and the old guy was standing in front of us. People were moving away. The police were coming. I could see them. I couldn't really move much. I felt a kind of kicking in my face, and I discovered it was my mouth, which was saying the time of calamity thing, but at the top of my lungs. We were shouting. We were broadcasting. And then over all of us, as the cops came through the crowd, the guy started this crazy calling. Both out loud and on the feed, this crazy calling over all of it, over all our chorus, and it went, "We enter a time of calamity, blood on the tarmac, fingers in the juicer, towers of air frozen in the lunar wastes, models dead on the runways with their legs facing backward, children with smiles that can't be undone, chicken shall rot in the aisles, see the pillars fall." While we said again and again, "We enter a time of calamity! We enter a time of calamity!" And others in the room said it too, and Violet looked as scared as me, and I tried to take her hand, and she tried to take mine, and the police were by our side, hitting the man over the head again and again with stunners and sticks, and he fell on one knee, and finally my fingers found her wrist, Violet's. It felt so soft, like something I'd never felt before. It felt like the neck of a swan in the wind. And then the police were at our sides, whispering to us, "We're going to have to shut you off now. We're going to have to shut you off." And then they touched us, and bodies fell, and there was nothing else. Part 2. Eden. Awake. The first thing I felt was no credit. I tried to touch my credit, but there was nothing there. It felt like I was in a little room. My body... I was in a bed, on top of my arm, which was asleep, but I didn't know where. I couldn't find the lunar GPS to tell me. Someone had left a message in my head, which I found, and then kept finding everywhere I went, which said that there was no transmission signal, that I was currently disconnected from FeedNet. I tried to chat Link and then Marty, but nothing. There was no transmission signal. I was currently disconnected from FeedNet, of course. And I was starting to get scared, so I tried to chat my parents. I tried to chat them on Earth, but there was no transmission, etc. I was currently, etc. So I opened my eyes. College try. "Nothing," she said. I'd gotten up and was sitting on the chair beside her. We were in a hospital. We took up a ward. Link was still asleep. Nurses went by. I said, "I can't see anything through the feed." "No," she said, "or through my hospital gown, so stop trying." I smiled. "You know, I thought maybe." "Sure you did. Want some apple juice?" We'd been up for 15 or 20 minutes. Everything in my head was quiet. It was fucked. "What do we do?" she asked. "I don't know." Boring. There was nothing there but the walls. We looked at them and at each other. We looked really squelch, our hair and stuff. We had remote relays attached to us to watch our blood and our brains. There were 5 walls because the room was irregular. One of them had a picture of a boat on it. The boat was on a pond or maybe lake. I couldn't find anything interesting about that picture at all. There was nothing that was about to happen or had just happened. I couldn't figure out even the littlest reason to paint a picture like that. Still boring. Our parents had been notified while we were asleep. Only Loga hadn't been touched by the hacker. She hadn't let him touch her because he looked really creepy to her, so she stood way far away. There were also others, people we'd never met, who'd been touched, and they were in the wards too. He touched 13 people in all. There was a police officer there waiting in a chair. He told us that we would be offline for a while until they could see what had to be done and check for viruses and decrypt the feed history to get information to use against the guy in court. They said that they had identified him and that he was a hacker and a naysayer of the worst kind. We were frightened and kept touching our heads. Suddenly our heads felt real empty. At least in the hospital, they had better gravity than the hotel. Missing the feed. I missed the feed. I don't know when they first had feeds, like maybe 50 or 100 years ago. Before that, they had to use their hands and their eyes. Computers were all outside the body. They carried them around outside them, in their hands, like if you carried your lungs in a briefcase and opened it to breathe. People were really excited when they first came out with feeds. It was all da-da-da, this big educational thing, da-da-da, your child will have the advantage, encyclopedias at their fingertips, closer than their fingertips, etc. That's one of the great things about the feed, that you can be super smart without ever working. Everyone is super smart now. You can look things up automatic, like science and history, like if you want to know which battles of the Civil War George Washington fought in and shit. It's more now. It's not so much about the educational stuff, but more regarding the fact that everything that goes on the feed. All the feedcast and the instant news that's on there.
So there's all the entertainment I was missing without a feed. Like the girls were all missing their favorite feedcast, the show called Oh, Wow, Thing, that has all these kids like us who do stuff but get all pouty, which is what the girls go crazy for, the poutiness. But the braggest thing about the feed, the thing that made it really big, is that it knows everything you want and hope for, sometimes before you even know what those things are. It can tell you how to get them and help you make buying decisions that are hard. Everything we think and feel is taken in by the corporations, mainly by data ones like FeedLink and OnFeed and American Feedware, and they make a special profile, one that's keyed just to you, and then they give it to their branch companies or other companies buy them, and they can get to know what it is we need. So all you have to do is want something, and there's a chance it will be yours. Of course, everyone is like, da-da-da, evil corporations, oh, they're so bad. We all say that, and we all know that they control everything. I mean, it's not great, because who knows what evil shit they're up to. Everyone feels bad about that, but they're the only way to get all this stuff, and it's no good getting pissy about it, because they're still going to control everything, whether you like it or not. Plus, they keep, like, everyone in the world employed, so it's not like we could do without them. And it's really great to know everything about everything whenever we want, and to have it just, like, in our brain, just sitting there. In fact, the thing that made me pissy was when they couldn't help me at all, so I was just lying there and couldn't play any of the games on the feed and couldn't chat anyone and couldn't do a fucking thing except look at that stupid boat painting, which was even worse because now I saw that there was no one on the boat, which was even more stupid and was kind of how I felt, that the sails were up and the rudder was, well, whatever rudders are, but there was no one on board to look at the horizon. Cash and carry. I had a few pages cached from right before the feed stopped. I flipped through them sadly. I went back and forth between them. One was a message from the crazy asshole which said, "You have been hacked by the Coalition of Pity." The other was a good sale at Weatherby and Crotch, which by this time I'd probably missed. It was too bad because I would have liked to have been able to take the opportunity to check out these great bargains. For example, they had a trim shirt with side pockets that I thought I probably would have bought, except it only came in sand, persimmon, and vetch. Night. And boring. It was Saturday night. The main lights were out. It had been a day since any of us had heard from the feed. Our parents were probably already on the moon and were coming to the hospital the next morning. For most of the day since we woke up after the attack, we'd stared at the walls. We'd been sitting in our beds and we tapped our feet on the rails. None of us could get the tune of I'll Sex You In out of our heads. Someone kept starting it up, and then the others would swear and tell them to shut up. And we couldn't help ourselves, and we'd start to tap it out on our trays with a spork. Link had finally woken up, and he paced up and down the floor. Loga came by during the afternoon, and she talked to all of us, and she kept saying, "Oh, oh," in a sorry tone of voice, which was nice, except that then she would pause, and we could tell she was M-chatting all the news back to our friends on Earth. Occasionally, she'd forget, and she'd say out loud to no one, "Oh, my God, yes, right here," or, "Hello," or whatever it was she was saying in her head. She would laugh at jokes we couldn't hear. Once she went to the bathroom, casual-like, and came back with her hair parted a different place. Callista and Quendi watched her. Later, without saying anything, they went and did their hair different like that, too. Marty was sometimes saying his usual kind of thing, which was like, "Fuck this shit! Fuck this!" He wanted to be out playing basketball or something. There was nothing to do. Violet stared at her hands in her lap. I looked over at her. I smiled, you know, supportive. She looked at me and then went back to staring at her hands. Now it was night and all the big lights were out. We were lying there. There were machines that were taking our pulse and shit. We were all supposed to be sleeping. I heard Violet walk across the floor and head for the bathroom. A few minutes later, I heard her walking back. "Hey," I said. "Yeah, hey," she said. She stopped. "You can..." I said. I pulled myself up against the pillows. "Why don't you sit down for a sec?" She sat down in the chair by my bed. I could see the curve of her nose against my pulse, which was green and bumpy. We sat there for a while. I was thinking, this is nice. We're just sitting here. We don't have to say anything. I felt real contented. I lay my head back on my pillow. I looked over at her face.
I could see the light from my heartbeat on her tears. I said, you're crying.
Yes,
she said. You don't, I didn't know how to say what I wanted. I tried, you don't seem like a crier.
No,
she said. We sat. Now the silence wasn't very good. Her head was low. I could see the curve of her cheek against my brain waves, which were red and loopy. She said,
you go try to have fun like a normal person with a real life. Just for one night you want to live, and suddenly you're screwed.
You're not screwed.
I'm screwed.
We sat there. I wanted to say something to cheer her up. I had a feeling that cheering her up might be a lot of work. I was thinking of how sometimes trying to say the right thing to people, it's like some kind of brain surgery, and you have to tweak exactly the right part of the lobe. Except with talking, it's more like brain surgery with old rusted skewers and things, maybe like those things you used to eat lobster, but brown. And you have to get exactly the right place, and you're touching around in the brain, but the patient, she keeps jumping and saying, ow. Thinking of it like this, I started to not want to say anything. I kept thinking of nice things I could say, like, I'm glad you went out last night because that's how I met you. Or, and I think you are a normal person, but they all seem just smarm. So we just sat there together and we didn't say anything. And it wasn't bad. I hoped she could see my smile in the light of my brain. Father. When my father got there the next morning, he didn't stay long. He was being very powerful and businesslike. He was dressed up, and he looked like he was ready to give some orders and sort things out. He looked like everyone around us was stupid, and he was going to roll up his sleeves and do some real clarity work. He stood there staring at me for a few seconds, and I was like, what? What? He seemed surprised, and then he blinked. He said, oh, shit. Yeah, I forgot. No M-chatting, just talking. I was like, do you have to remind me? What's doing? How's smell factor? Your brother has a name. How's mom? She's like, whoa, she's like so stressed out. This is, dude, he said. Dude, this is some way bad shit. I could completely feel Violet watching us. She was listening. I didn't want to have her judging us and thinking we're too boring or stupid or something. My father asked me to tell him what happened. I told him, leaving out some parts like trying to break into the minibar. He just kept shaking his head and going, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Shit. Yeah. Finally, he stood up. I could tell he was pissed. He held up his hands. He said, they want to subpoena your memories. This is this thing which is... Okay, this is bullshit. After a minute, he said to someone who wasn't there, okay, okay. He turned to me and he said, I'm going down to the police. Dad, I said, when am I going home? Dad put his hand over his ear. Okay, he said. His mouth twitched. He nodded at someone. He hit me on the knee and left. I was staring at the wall in the stupid boat picture. I heard Quendi say to Violet, when are your parents coming? She said in a flat voice. They're busy.
Busy?
Yeah, with jobs. I guess they can't come at all. Salad days with sneeze guard. The next morning, we hadn't heard anything. We decided we needed to be cheered up big time. So Marty invented this game where we blew hypodermic needle tips through tubing at the skinless anatomy man on the wall. We spat the needles and tried to pin his nads. It was the beginning of a great day, one of the greatest days of my life. We all played the dart game, and we laughed and sang, I'll sex you in. Everyone was smiling, and it was Skip. The surprise was, Violet was the best at the dart game. She always won. I sucked. She tried to teach me. It was a complete turn-on. She took my hand and put the tube in my mouth. She whispered, aspirate with the tongue. People were really impressed. Link and Marty were completely hitting on Violet for it, but she didn't pay them any attention, and sometimes she would stand there with one hand on my shoulder. I could feel that she was putting pressure on it and that she didn't need to stand with all her weight because I was there. Then Logo came into the hospital for a while, and we were all talking to her about stuff when she stopped for a second because the girl's favorite feedcast, Oh, Wow, Thing, was on, and they were all like, tell us what's happening, tell us what's happening.
So we all gathered around her in our little gowns, and she sat there cross-legged on the bed and told us, okay, so like now Greg's walking in, and he's, oh my God, he's completely malfunctioning. He's completely in mal, and Steph is crying on the sofa. Okay, so she goes, and she told us the story of what's happening as it happened, and we all sat there smiling. I never heard Loga tell a story this good before, and she even used her hands and stuff. And her eyes were vacant like she was seeing some other world, which I guess she was. Jackie is sitting on the front of the boat, and he holds his hands up, and he's going, oh my God, he goes, Organelle, I always loved you from when we first went sailing. Quendi was like, oh God, this is so romantic. Oh Meg, big Meg, you can feel the breeze on your skin. It's warm like those nights, you know, when we're like, we're always going to be young. The breeze is like that. I wish you could feel it. We all shivered. She said, you can smell the salt. The moon's out. It's high above everything and soft. Quendi actually cried one tear. Violet and I looked at each other. We didn't look away. We were still like that, looking into each other's eyes and all, when the doctor came in and was like, what the hell has happened in the examination room? What's with all the needles? And he was upgrading to homicidal and going all, da-da-da, professional care unit, da-da-da, dangerous and costly, da-da, infection, da-da-da-da, etc. Luckily, Link's mom heard him yelling at us, and she's a complete dragon, so she gave him a piece of her mind. She told him that we were all suffering from a very stressful experience, and we weren't used to these kind of stresses, and he had to understand that we had to have our fun, too. I still felt kind of bad about it because we made a big mess and Violet was completely Meg blushing, but at least we didn't get, like, shoved into orbit on cyber gurneys or something. I liked being just a few beds away from her. We could wave. We all talked about old music, like from when we were little, and all the stupid bands they had back then, and the stupid fashions we liked in middle school. Like the year when the big fashion from L.A. and shit was that everyone wanted to dress like they were in an elderly convalescent home, and there was this weird nostalgic chic for that. So we all remembered having stretch pants and velour tops, and Calista even bought one of those stupid accessory walkers at Weatherby and Crotch. There were those stupid ads for having your pants pulled up like around your chest. Violet said she still had a cane at home. When we were eating dinner, sitting on her bed side by side, she said to me, this is fun. It weirdly is, I said. Maybe these are our salad days. Huh? You know, happy. What's happy about a salad? She shrugged. Ranch, she said. The garden. Violet was off someplace talking to the doctor. I say someplace because we were using the examination room to blow needles at the anatomical guy's basket. Link and Calista were standing real close by the vibrating bath, and I realized that they had probably decided to hook up. It looked like Calista was getting over Link being so stupid, which was brag because he's a nice guy. Quendi sat there on the table, glaring at them. Violet came back from the doctor. She was all intense looking. I asked her what was wrong. She said she'd found a place she wanted to show me. I said, sure, and I went with her. We went out into the hall. The shouting from the examination room was more distant. We walked for a ways through some tubes and so on. People floated by automatically on gurneys. She walked in front of me. Her slippers went ftick, ftick, sliss, ftick on the floors. They were soft sounds, like the sounds mouths make when they open and close. I watched her from behind. When we stopped to wait for an uptube, she lifted her ankle so her heel came out of the slipper, and with her toes, she slid it back and forth on the tile without thinking about it. She massaged the floor. When the uptube was free, she settled her foot back in and walked, ftick, ftick, sliss, ftick, right on in. She took me up to a huge window. We stood in front of it. Outside the window there had been a garden, like I guess you could call it a courtyard or terrarium. But a long time ago the glass ceiling over the terrarium had cracked, so everything was dead, and there was moon dust all over everything out there. Everything was gray.
Also, something was leaking air and heat out in the garden, lots of waste air, and the air was rocketing off into space through the hole, so all the dead vines in the garden were standing straight up, slapping back and forth, pulled toward the crack in the ceiling where you could see the stars.
Whoa, I said.
Isn't it beautiful?
It's like, I said, it's like a squid in love with the sky.
She was only looking at me, which was nice. I hadn't felt anything like that for a long time. She rubbed my head and she went, "You're the only one of them who uses metaphor."
She was staring at me and I was staring at her and I moved toward her and we kissed. The vines beat against each other out in the gray dead garden. They were all writhing against the spine of the Milky Way on its edge. And for the first time, I felt her spine too, each knuckle of it, with my fingers, while the air leaked and the plants whacked each other near the silent stars. Dead language. We were watching Marty invent a game called Struggle of the Dying Warrior. It involved him being tied with all of his limbs, like his arms and his legs, onto the frame of his bed with the rubber tubing. And then he tried to get up and walk. He was not getting very far. Violet and I were sitting on a bunk, swinging our legs in rhythm. We were talking about our families. I told her that I had a little brother. She said I hadn't mentioned him. I said he was a lot younger and a real pain. Violet asked me about my mom and dad. I told her that my dad did some kind of banking thing and my mom was in design. I didn't understand what my dad did exactly. Whatever it was, he was off doing it on the moon until tomorrow when they were going to tell us about our feeds. When I asked her what her dad did, she said, "He's a college professor. He teaches the dead languages."
"People study that?"
She shrugged.
"I guess."
"Okay, so what are the dead languages?"
"They're languages that were once important but that nobody uses anymore. They haven't been used for a long time, except by historians."
"Like what languages?"
"You know, Fortran, Basic."
"What does one sound like?"
She slid off the bunk and went to get her bag. She opened it and pulled out something, which was a pen. She also had paper. I looked at her funny.
"You write?" I said. "With a pen?"
"Sure," she said, a little embarrassed.
She wrote something down. She put the pad of paper on my lap.
She asked me, "Do you know how to read?"
I nodded. "I can read, a little." I kind of protested it in school ink on the grounds that the silent E is stupid.
"This is the language called Basic," she said.
On the paper it said, 002110 go to 013500 013500 peak 16388 comma 236 013510 poke 16389 comma 236. She read it to me. I could tell the numbers fine.
"So what does that mean?" I asked. "It's the first thing my dad teaches the students on the first day," she said. "It means I came, I saw, I conquered."
I looked at her pen. "You write all the time?" I said, completely in awe.
"I've done it since I was little."
"Do you write stuff?"
"Not stories or anything. I just write down things I see sometimes."
"On paper?"
"Yeah."
I looked at her. "You're one funny enchilada," I said. She nodded real quiet. "Doesn't your hand get all cramped up?" I asked. "Don't you end up, like, hook hand?" I made a hook hand. She made a hook hand. We pawed each other with hook hand. She shook her head and smiled. I asked, "Why don't you use the feed? It's way faster."
"I'm pretentious," she said. "Really pretentious."
"Yeah, so the studio audience has noticed. But seriously."
"Seriously?"
Suddenly something occurred to me. I looked up at her. Marty had fallen to his knees and was being pulled back toward the bed by the tubing. His cheeks were puffed out, his hands were in fists, his fingers were getting blue, all the ridges on his arms stood out. Callista and Link were whistling with their fingers in their mouths. The other people in the ward were yelling, "Shut up! Would you all shut up?" I asked Violet, "Your father, he's a college professor, but he was too busy to come to see you after you, like, completely collapsed from the hacker attack? Too busy?" She looked me in the eye.
"No," she said, "but that's what I told you."
Release.
The salad days couldn't last forever. We really wanted to get back to Earth. Everyone wanted to forget how sucky the moon had been. Tuesday, just before lunch, a doctor and a policewoman and a technician came in. Our parents were all talking over in the corner. The rest of us were all sitting around talking about spaceship disasters. The technician called us to attention and went through this whole thing. He was sorry for the delay, but they wanted to be absolutely sure there was no permanent hack, that our feeds were safe, etc. He was all like, da-da-da, must have been a difficult time for all of us, da-da-da. We would find our normal service resumed without interruption, da-da-da-da-da. He was meg sorry we had to go through this, and he had complied with the police and handed over our data, da-da-da, like, thank you all again for your patience. One by one, we went into the examination room. In there, there were nurses and the doctor and the technician. The nurses were watching the relays, our blood pressure and all. They were like, don't worry about anything, you'll feel it all coming back in a few minutes. The doctor touched a boot stick to my head. He said, okay, could we, like, get a thingy, a reading on his limbic activity? The boot stick was cold on my neck. I could feel the little hairs standing up around it. There was some kind of static electricity. They moved the boot stick a little. I heard it beep. You should feel it now, said one of the nurses. I didn't feel anything. I looked around. They were watching me closely. No, I said. I shifted on the bed. I didn't feel anything. I said, nothing. I feel nothing. Hold your head still, said the doctor. He shifted the boot stick and it beeped again. I kicked my heels against the bed. There's nothing, nothing, I said. Why don't you, said the nurse, pulse up, rising. Limbic activity okay? He's just nervous. Don't worry, it'll hit him in like a second. We have readings on engram formation. Signal engaged. Don't drop the exterior relays yet.
The Ford Laputa Sky and Suburb Monthly says there's no other up car like it, and we agree.
There you go, said the nurse.
You'll be more than a little attracted to its powerful T44 Fermion lift with vertical rise of 50 feet per second. And if you like comfort, quality, and class, the supple upholstery and ergonomic...
They slapped me on the back. I laughed, and the doctor and I did these big grins. I went back out into the other room, and we're all starting to feel it now. We're all starting to feel it good.
Name is Terry Punk, and I'd like to tell you about upper body strength.
And the feed was pouring in on us now, all of it, all of the feed net. And we could feel all of our favorites, and there were our files and our M-chat lines. It came down on us like water. It came down like frickin' spring rains, and we were dancing in it.
Celebrate fun. Celebrate friends. You've just come through something difficult, and this is the time for a table full of love and friendship and the exciting entrees you can only find at...
We were dancing in it like rain, and we couldn't stop laughing, and we were running our hands across our bodies, feeling them again. And I saw Violet, almost hysterical with laughter, rubbing her cheeks and pulling her hands down across her breasts, her chin up in the air.
Big bro, you there? Mom says I should...
Until one crazy day when this cranky old woman and this sick little boy meet a coy dog with a heart of gold. And they all learn an important lesson about love. The NYT called it...
Hits a grounder to the mound.
In other news, protests continued today against the American annexation of the moon. Several South American countries, including Brazil and Argentina, have submitted requests to join the Global Alliance in response. President Trumbull spoke from the White House.
What we have today with the things that are happening in today's society is...
She held my hand. We found each other's hands through the, like, waterfall and...
If you liked I'll Sex You In, you'll love these other popular slump rock epics by hot new Storm and Chunder band Beefquake, full of riffs that...
We handpicked our spring fashions.
And holding hands, we danced.
Hardcore, the best feed sim battle game ever to rip up the horizon. 60 levels of detonation and viscera just waiting to fly at your command, Captain Bastard. If you don't feel slogging waist deep within 15 seconds, we'll eat our fucking hats.
In your absence, you may not have heard.
Hand in hand, we danced. Part 3. Utopia. Normal. Things were back to normal real quick. We went back to Earth and we got all rested up and our moms brought us ginger ale in bed. We chatted all the time on the feeds and shared music and shit. We had this major debate going on because we watched the Oh Wow thing, and there was this part where Organelle asked Jackie whether she had Meg hips, and he was like, since you ask, we both could work out more. And she was like, you shithead, you should have lied. And so all the guys were saying, no way, if she asked him this complete question, he should answer it. And the girls were like, if you ever insult how I look, then you're completely shallow. And we were like, but she asked. And they were like, oh my God, you don't get it. And Link said, if they really didn't want to know how they looked, then how come they asked so much? And then I said this thing, and Callista said this thing, and it was like, da-da-da-da-da, 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 all day. It was kind of fun. I like debates where you argue about different points of view. My family, they were coming and going. I saw them on the landings or sometimes when I went down to the kitchen behind the counters. My dad didn't really talk to me except to walk up and check to see if I had a fever, which I didn't because it was a software problem. My mother was always holding on to my brother, smell factor, like squeezing him like a doll. She was real busy with him and she went to Pee Wee League games for him and even took him to work with her sometimes. When she wasn't around in the afternoons, he sat in his closet watching Top Quark, with it broadcasting all over the place. So I watched it too, because there was nothing else to do, really, but watch Top Quark and eat chipwitches.
Captain Top Quark, that whole planet is so sad that I think they'll need a whole lot of good thoughts and hugging.
That's why, lickety-split, and we're on our way. Charm Quark, prepare the friend cannon. Bosun, turn our biggest, orangest sails toward Cryos on the planet Sedalia.
Aye, aye, sir. You've made me one happy particle, sir.
Smell Factor had one of those birds now, one of the ones that didn't fly or sing, the metal ones. So I could tell they were Meg yesterday. Stuff always starts with people who are cool and in college, and then works down until when the six-year-olds get it, it's like, who cares? The birds must have been yesterday for a while, because I didn't see them in any ads, and even Smell Factor was leaving his around, not clutching it. A few days later, I went out on errands, because really there was no problem anymore. It felt good to get out and to see all the up cars and tubes and in the parking lots. Just normal stuff, like people walking and talking on their feeds and kids hanging out and shit. There were all the suburbs stacked on top of each other, like Applecrest and Fox Hollow. And I would just fly through the tubes in the suburbs in my parents' up car, looking at all the houses and the lawns, each one in its own pod, and everything was all, like, neat. And then I'd go home and sit on my bed and watch the feed, and everything seemed normal. It's times like this that I'm real glad I have friends. They say friends are worth your weight in gold. We had a party at the end of the week over at Quendy's because her parents were off choking somewhere. That was when everyone was having these choking parties. I mean, it was completely midlife crisis. It was the first time I saw Violet since we were on the moon. It was brag because she didn't have a ride and I could borrow my parents' up car, so I got to fly over and pick her up. I met her at a mall near her house. The mall was right on the surface and you could see the sky through the dome. She was waiting there and looking up at the sun hitting one of the department stores. Violet lived in a suburb that was a few hundred miles away from my suburb, so while we drove, we had a little time to talk before we got to the party. It was great because we had music on our feeds, and it was the same music, so I knew she was hearing the same notes that I was hearing, and our heads were like moving together, and she put her hand near the lift lever, so when I got to the exit tube and went to lift us, her hand was there, and her fingers closed over the lift lever, and we lifted it together and were flung up into the sky. We were going along pretty fast and going around towers and shit, and she asked me, what'll a party be like? Like a party. I haven't been to many. I shrugged. You do this. I don't know. It's fun. It's a party. What do you do instead of parties? My friends and I are all homeschooled, so we're a mixed bag. Bettina's mother has us come over and weave ponchos. You don't go to school, Ink? Alf's parents teach us how to breech load their anti-aircraft gun. Whoa! Can you show me? Here's a surprising thing. It's all in the wrists. Unit. Yeah, unit. God, I'm so excited to be going to a real party. Oh, yeah? Will it be like it is on the feed? I patted her hand. Yeah, I mean dumber, but yeah.
Why, this makes me feel like a special girl, the specialest girl in the world. She raised up her hand and we knocked knuckles together. She leaned back in her seat. She pulled some seatbelt out and then let it roll back in. We were both thoughtful for a minute. There were some weather blimps in front of us. They were all yellow in the sunset that was spreading out over the clouds. We flew between them. We could barely see the silver of their blimp hides through the color of syrup. They were like a herd. She asked, "Do you think things are going to be different?" "From what?" "From the way things were before." I looked at her. She looked serious suddenly. I shrugged. I said, "It's good to have people again, like all these people, talking to you in your head." "We've all been through this big thing together," she said. "It's got to change us somehow." She rested her arm along the back of my seat. I leaned my head back. I could feel my hairs rub against her arm. Even to my hairs, her arm felt soft. Undervalued truffle. We got to the party, and it was a pretty good party, but low-key. When we got there, for a second, we stood in the entryway because Link and Marty were playing each other at this game, the Cranky Tumble of Dark House, one of the ones with zombies and mutants, and they were all spinning around and shooting their fingers like guns. They couldn't see anything, just the game feed, so when Violet walked in, Marty almost whacked her in the stomach with his fist. He and Link were swearing and hopping up and down on the marble tiles. "Unit," said Link, "just get out of the way." Marty was like, "Out of the fucking way! We're, oh shit, we're, oh, unit!" He was all shouting at Link, who was like missing some shot at a spine leech. We went into the living room and over to the table where Quendi had all the drinks and beer. People were sitting around drinking, and some of them had music on their feeds and were sitting around talking to it, and some others had imported a feed cast of Snowblind, a comedy about a young man who nothing ever happens to until one crazy day when he crosses the mob at a ski resort and finds out what's really buried in those moguls, and then all hell breaks loose. NC-17.